Now, back to Lansing's only live afternoon talk show, Ebling and You, on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack and Scott, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Won't be long, Scott. We'll be fanning out across mid-Michigan, and our next guest, Tom Crawford, will be at Holt for East Lansing Holt, and I want to welcome him in now. Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jack. If you get some wind out here over my cell phone, I apologize for that, but it's an absolute otherwise beautiful night for high school football out here at Holt High School. Our early arriving crowd here, the Rams fans, they show up early. EL's got their fans coming in. It's a perfect night for football.
Did you ever imagine a month ago that this game would be played with East Lansing 2-0 and Holt 0-2?
No, but I mean, I think that you gotta look at that in a larger picture, though, when you consider how good Holt played against Rockford last week. I know they turned the ball over. They played pretty bad against Sexton, and they made some more mistakes against Rockford that allowed them to get back in the game and eventually win. But, no, I didn't think that. Although, you know, everybody's picking Holt to win, and it'll be challenging for East Lansing. Their starting tailback, Spencer Treadwell, is out tonight, and that'll be a big blow to them.
Well, we have a lot of games to see. I understand there are injuries on both of these teams, so they won't be at 100%. Scott, you are headed out to DeWitt, and you're going to watch Hazlitt DeWitt, maybe Mid-Michigan's number one rivalry. And DeWitt's really had its way in this series. It's won six straight over the Vikings. So it'll be very interesting to see if Hazlitt can answer against DeWitt's high-powered passing attack.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I haven't seen either of these teams play, and I know DeWitt was so good last year. I just kind of want to see, compare them to that team and see if they do live up to the hype again.
I was going to go over to Everett here, Tom, and see Sexton Everett, and I think Sexton has a chance to go a long way in the state tournament, but change my mind. I think that I'm going to be over at Okemos for Grand Ledge and Okemos, and I think Andrea is going to be over where you are, over at Holt. So we will get together again tomorrow morning, and we will have our Coach of the Week at 8:35, and then we'll have our prep roundtable, and we'll talk all about high school football between 8:30 and 9, and then an awful lot of college football on tap. It's one of the best week twos I can remember.
Yeah, it is. You know, on the college front, you got some really large games, if you will. Michigan, Notre Dame, obviously, from a personal standpoint, that's big to me, and it's big to a lot of people. And then also Ohio State and Miami of Florida, and then obviously the big challenge that Penn State has going down to Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama. That could be a huge win for them, although I think that might be doubtful. And there's some other big games as well. And so we are really jumping into the fray here in college football and some obviously big games in high school football tonight.
Michigan State in action at Ford Field against Florida Atlantic, a game that was moved because of stadium reconstruction in Florida. And somewhat disappointing ticket sale thus far. I think they've changed the ticket prices a couple of times now. And originally they had a premium price for the ticket, and then they came back closer to normal, and now I see they're selling some tickets for $19 up in the nosebleed territory. So I guess it shows that they can sell out Ford Field for Michigan State basketball, but they can't necessarily do it for football.
Yeah, I know. That's a really quirky situation down there at Ford Field, you know, having that game down there. I mean, noon kickoff in downtown Detroit. You know, the only good side about it, it's supposed to rain tomorrow, so it might be nice to have a roof over your head. But I'm not expecting a big Spartan crowd. If they had a better opponent, absolutely.
Yeah.
But this is not Kentucky playing Michigan State in basketball, if you will.
Right. Well, we have seen Michigan State and Florida Atlantic in the rain, trust me. We're still drying out from that one a couple years ago. But in terms of a Michigan-Notre Dame game in the rain, what impact does that have? Who would that favor?
Well, you know, I thought about that a lot. You know, I mean, some, you know, people look at that in two different ways. Sometimes, you know, obviously Notre Dame has a pretty good passing attack, and Michael Floyd, great receiver. But, you know, the receivers know where they're going, and the corners don't know where the receivers are going. Sometimes people look at it that way. I don't think rain affects the collegiate game as much as it would affect like a high school team. So I don't think that is a huge factor. It's not supposed to be a drencher. It's supposed to be scattered showers in South Bend. So, and Michigan is a run first, pass second type of spread offense, and I don't think it's going to affect them that much as well. I'm not looking at it as a huge factor. I'm looking at Michigan secondary as the huge factor, if you will.
A lot of people, Tom, have said, based on studies, that rain usually helps the offense as long as they can keep a dry ball. And the one thing that kills an offense is wind.
Yes. Yeah, we've seen wind. We saw wind in the 2004 Michigan State game. Do you remember that wind?
I do remember crazy. That.
Yeah, there's been a lot of those games, and so I, you know, I'm not sure how the latest on the weather is, but I'm looking forward. Great opportunity for Michigan, obviously a great opportunity for Notre Dame, and then Michigan State just needs to hold serve here until they get Notre Dame at home, and then go on from there, and then when we get in the Big Ten season, then we'll really be breaking things down.
How important do you think it is, Tom, for the Big Ten to have a terrific showing tomorrow? With at least two wins out of these games at Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Miami, and Penn State, Alabama.
Well, I think it's huge because, you know, I'm a big, you know, a big proponent of, you know, you're trying to establish credibility early in the season, because once the conference play starts, you can't prove anything because it's all inbreeding. You're playing each other until the bowl games. There's two opportunities to prove your conference's worth. You know, the non-conference play and obviously the bowl games. And the Big Ten did pretty good in the bowl games last year. They kind of flubbed up a little bit in pre-conference ball last year. So I think it's really important. I'd just soon see all Big Ten teams win, because it helps, you know, everybody. High tides raises all ships.
I didn't know that you would be cheering for Michigan State tomorrow against Florida Atlantic. That's great news, Tom.
Playing FAU, come on. I mean, I don't have any fantasy of Howard Schnellenberger pulling off an upset down there. I think Michigan State's too good. I think they won handily last week, and they made a lot of mistakes doing it. So that shows you know that probably was a misleading score as it was.
Hey, Florida Atlantic beat UAB and got a high-powered offense. You never know.
Yeah, never know, but I'm not holding out hope for that. I think we'll see what they do against Notre Dame at home. But I think Michigan State's going to win all their non-conference games, and their three losses are going to come in Big Ten play, as we talked about last week.
Yeah, and a lot of people very interested to see what happens with Denard Robinson on a bigger stage, not necessarily bigger in terms of the crowd. Couldn't get any bigger than it was last Saturday for the most attended game in NCAA history. But in terms of the focus, the spotlight, the attention, and the opponent, I think we're going to see what he's made of.
Well, that's true. In my opinion, South Bend going down Notre. I mean, Michigan, I mean, it's haunted. It's a haunted house for Michigan when it comes to close games. Yeah, they won on a last field goal, and you know, I think it was 1994, and but they've been burned in a lot of close games, and then they won big, and obviously in 2006. So I'm hoping for a big lead for Michigan, have them hold on tomorrow, and I'll give my prediction of that game tomorrow on the Jack and Tom Show.
You have been to South Bend. You've seen Michigan Notre Dame games there, right?
Oh yeah, I've had mixed results. First one, I was down there in '78 when they renewed the rivalry. When I was a senior at Michigan, went down there and the Wolverines won 28-14, and Ralph Clayton had a big game, and Rick Leach played really well, and Joe Montana, the quarterback for Notre Dame. So great memories from that. But I've been to a couple of losses along the way too.
Yeah, Rick Leach saved all of his interceptions that year for the Michigan State game.
He sure did a few weeks later. But he played great in that Notre Dame game, and that was a good win for the Wolverines.
Wanted to ask you to describe for our listeners what the atmosphere is for a football Saturday in South Bend, because I think I've been two games on more than 100 campuses, and I've never seen anything that quite compares.
You know, I'm not Catholic, okay, and I'm a public school kind of guy, obviously. But the place is magical. I will say that about Notre Dame. I mean, the band, you know, that street, that, you know, the yeah. courtyard street or whatever, they march down and they line up and they're doing the Rakes of Hollow. They're doing all those different Notre Dame songs, and the buildings, the campus, Touchdown Jesus, everything about it. I mean, it's all there. I mean, we talked about Wrigley Field if you're a Major League Baseball fan, Fenway Park, all that good, all those other good venues out there. But if you're a college football fan, at one time on your bucket list, you got to go to a game at Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend because it truly is a special place.
Well, you know, I tease you about the Victor's Walk, and Michigan State has its walk from Kellogg Center. But there is nothing quite like the walk when the Notre Dame players get out of chapel and the band is there and lead them
right
down Notre Dame Avenue and fans on both sides of the street. And if that does not send chills up your spine, you are a corpse.
Yeah, you are, and because it's college football. And, you know, I mean, when that Notre Dame band's come, I mean, you get watery. You're in here for the other team. That's how crazy it is down there. But that's just been following, as you and I have, college football for 4 and 5 decades. And that's one of the true traditions. I keep thinking about those great Notre Dame teams in the 60s with Terry Hanratty. And,
right.
And all the way, Larry Conjar and Nick Eddy, and then all the way through the 70s and 80s. And, special place. Got to get down there if you haven't been down there.
You know, you mentioned Joe Montana, and he was in the news again this week. And he was debunking the myth of Rudy. And
really?
It was a little bit of a surprise that he would go there. But Rudy was on television again last night. And, of course, we had Sean Astin on the show
right
a year ago and talking about the making of that. You know, a guy hadn't been in that many films, but he picked good ones.
He picked a good one. I love that. We watched it not too long ago, watched it this summer. My son watches that movie a lot. There's certain scenes on there that you can just go back and it just jacks you all up. And him coming out of the tunnel,
yeah,
that one tops the list.
Yeah, the scene that always got me, I was just kind of sappy, but where all the players would go into Dan Devine's office and one by one lay their jerseys on his desk,
God,
and say, "I want Rudy to start." And Scott shaking his head, "That never happened.
Never happened.
Never happened."
No, I've heard that story before.
I don't want to know that. Don't tell me that. I don't want to.
Fine, we'll talk about it next segment, Tom. Don't worry.
Yeah,
tell me that when I'm not around.
We've also had we've had Angelo Pizzo, who wrote Rudy and Hoosiers, on the show, and didn't bother to find new music. He just borrowed it from one for the next. And we also had Danny Rudinger. We had Rudy himself on the show a couple of years ago. And it really was hard to believe to hear some of the teammates say that, you know, he was a pest. I didn't really like him. And the idea that they carried him off the field, there were a lot of guys who wanted to drop him.
Yeah, you know, I know that, but regardless of the personality aspect of him, I mean, you gotta acknowledge the desire, you know, to be able to run out of that tunnel. I know a lot of kids have those dreams, and
right. There's
probably tons of Rudys on every team right now to some degree, maybe not to that level, but that's why I like the movie.
Well, we invite everyone to give us a call tomorrow morning. Listen in, and you can catch us at 1320WILS.com. You can listen to us at your tailgates if you are in the car on the way down to South Bend or to downtown Detroit. You can pick us up that way as well. And if you can't hear us, you can go back and you can listen to some of the podcast segments. Howard Griffith is going to be with us. And, you know, they're honoring him tomorrow in Champaign, the 20th anniversary of his 8-touchdown game. So we will talk with you tomorrow morning, Tom. I know you've got to get busy for a big night of high school football.
I will do that.
All right. We'll be right back
with
our final segment, Jack and Scott, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS.